Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires is Joe Crazy Rider. How you doing today, Joe?
You know, one of these days I'm going to open a wrapper that's not going to say, sorry, you're not a winner, and I am out of here.
What are you opening that will give you enough money that you can leave behind the podcast?
It doesn't. Well, that could be easy. I could go on the corner and join the beggars and make more money than I'm making from this here podcast.
But
all
would it
money
be,
is
would it be hoarded? As emotionally satisfying?
Yeah.
Well, I'm fine. Reginald would love to take your spot.
Oh, yeah, as if you could stand being in the room with him.
Oh, no, I'd just say something and wander off and come back in a half hour. Edit myself in.
And then what happened is, you know, hey, funny, our podcast downloads have trickled to nothing.
Tripled to nothing. We're getting three times the listeners at zero.
Do you think we hired Oliver from the Brady Bunch or something?
Jeez. I did look at the numbers a little while ago. We're up from last year at this time. We are up 40%. So
ooh.
Thank you. Thank you, listeners, for telling everyone you've ever met your whole entire life. And by the way, if you don't like the show, first off, why are you listening? But if you don't like the show, don't forget to tell your enemies, because it's a real neat, shitty thing to do to them.
Well, I do want to break in, though, with a little sad news. No, unfortunately, this is legit sad news. One of the dealers, Jim Garr, who's been going to the Midwest Comic Book Association shows forever under the guise of the Toy Wizard, just passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, he passed away of ALS, and if you know anything about it, it's a very, very vicious disease.
Okay, I was reading his fiance mentioned that her fiance had passed away of ALS, but I didn't put two and two together.
Yeah, he's the guy who used to be in the corner of the cons, had that huge wire setup filled with toys. I mean, I loved going over just to look at what the things he found. And, you know, when I would talk with him, usually away from the crowd, he'd say, you know, people just come and they want to argue about toy prices. And I said, yeah, but, you know, just like when I had Hot Comics, the point is you have them. You know, I never did quite figure out where he got his stuff. But I do know he was a voracious collector and a lot of fun to talk with. And, you know, he dealt pretty fairly with me. So I was kind of sad. It's just one of those, you know, kick in the guts. Especially since even as this podcast drop, we're, 5 days away from Fall Comic-Con. Of which, no doubt, Jim, I don't know if he was setting up, but he definitely would have been there one way or another. So, oh, by the way, you only got like 2 days left to get advance tickets. So if you go to mcbacomiccons.com, you can get them. And we'll talk more about the con in the future.
Another of the he's one of the powerhouses in the local Minnesota science fiction community. Baron Dave Rahm passed away as well. And it was kind of a surprise. He'd just gotten back from a visit to Europe, where he visited his European relatives and went to the World Science Fiction Convention. I knew him through two worlds. I knew him through the political world. He was one of the people who was heavily involved with Bart Cop from the area. And I knew him from science fiction. He mostly went to science fiction conventions, but he came to the comic convention from time to time. We'd had some conversations, not as long as I would like, because he was a very busy guy. But, yeah, he passed away, I think, within the last 2 weeks. So, kind of a somber note. But that's not what we're here to talk about.
Are we here to talk about nutritional facts on the back of a box of Junior Mints?
Sure!
All right, let's see. Lots of fat. Now, actually, Junior Mints are pretty good because they're very low fat.
Yes, they are. They're low fat because they're all sugar.
High carb, yes. Good. As a matter of fact, I think I'll just finish this box here.
So how many grams of fat per serving?
Well, in this box, which is approximately 52 G's, 4 grams.
Oh!
Three of them are saturated.
Because, you see, one serving of Spam is 14 grams of fat.
Yum.
So, we're here to we promised the listeners a couple weeks ago we would do a special episode. We got derailed last week.
Yeah.
So it's a special episode. Joe?
Hang on. Just making sure Gordon Jump's not hiding behind the bike stand.
I was going to ask, what happened to you in the back of Gordon Jump's bike shop?
Well, that was not the incident, but...
No, we're going to talk about Dark Knight.
Yeah, it was a dark night. A dark and stormy night. Snoopy's number one novel. Actually, I think the only novel he's ever published.
Well, that was the long-running joke he had. And I found out where Schultz got that. It was in a book on writing that came out in the 30s. It said, avoid cliches. Do not start with things like it was a dark and stormy night.
See how easy it is to derail this podcast.
So he wanted to kind of show that Snoopy was a very bad writer. But that's okay. We're not talking about a very bad writer. We're talking about a very good artist who changed comics.
Absolutely.
We're talking about The Dark Knight. We're going to talk about all three, and we're going to review the third one. But a lot of people forget what was going on when The Dark Knight came out.
I can summarize it in one sentence.
Okay.
Dark Knight came out, what, 86?
Yep.
I barely sold all my Batman comics for a quarter apiece the year before. Barely.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure if I didn't sell them for a quarter, I might have just, sold the whole box for $10.
One of the things that was very interesting at the time, Comic Buyer's Guide was the big fan award. Because we've gone through, because there was the Shazam Awards in the 70s. And then the Eagle Awards, which were a British award, they seemed to be the big thing. Because I remember when the X-Men won an award, they actually put it on the damn cover. And I was like, what the hell's an Eagle Award? But through the 80s, and even into the 90s a little bit, it was the Comic Buyer's Guide Fan Awards. And what it was, they had a ballot, and you would fill it out and send it in. And one of the things that fascinated the people who ran the awards was, every year, Batman would win favorite character, but the Batman comic was selling so poorly that in 84, over a weekend, they canceled Detective Comics on a Friday, and then when they came back on Monday, they went, no, we can't cancel it. It's our longest running book. We got to figure out a way to make it at least profitable. So Batman was a popular character that no one was buying the comics of. You also had Frank Miller, who had been, at one point, one of the hottest artists in comics.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, his run of Daredevil.
When he took over Daredevil, it was a bi-monthly. Within 4 issues of him doing it, it was monthly again. And by the time of Daredevil 181, it was Marvel's second best-selling book behind the X-Men. So again, it was another book that was almost canceled, and Miller had come on, and it was huge. And then he
confused the hell out of everybody and came out with something called Ronin from DC.
Well, what it was, he had been working on it. He wanted to do kind of an American manga story because he loved the book Lone Wolf and Cub, which hadn't been translated into the U.S. yet. And he wanted to do that style of storytelling in the U.S. And when he started it, he was working with Denny O'Neil on it. And Denny O'Neil said, no, you don't need a writer. And when he started work on it, it was supposed to be a graphic novel for the Epic line. Bet you didn't know that, did you?
No.
He was going to be creator-owned. It was through Epic. And Jeanette Kahn and Paul Levitz sat down with him, had a meal with him, convinced him to bring it over to DC, and they pretty much promised him the moon. You know, told him you could pick the paper stock, you could pick the format, all of these things, and the upfront page rate they gave him was so much that there was no way DC could have made a profit on it. But they were trying to bring Marvel creators over to DC.
Now, in the fanboy world, here's what I recall. You know, everybody's like, oh, Frank Miller, he's going to DC. Oh, his first thing coming out is Ronin. And it stunk like yesterday's turd.
Gone back and read it since?
I don't actually have it in my collection. It's one of those books I've been meaning to pick up. But all I recall is when it came out, everybody was confused as all hell.
Yep.
Nobody knew what it was about. Everybody ordered tons of copies of it. And let's take a look here. Ronin.
Yeah, it has since made billions of dollars.
Yeah, but they're running about a buck a piece on eBay.
Yeah, but they reprinted it.
Issue number 6 is the rarer of the one, because I think by the time...
Yeah, by then nobody cared anymore.
1, 2, 3, everybody was like cutting back on copies. And, you know, it's a common phenomenon. I mean, that's why Death made Red.
He's going to puke.
That's why that had a higher price at one time, because, you know, came out late, everybody returned it, nobody cared. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, there's, 1, 2, 3 printing, 4, 5, 6, 7 printings of the book so far, and a hardcover. And that's not even, that's a deluxe hardcover. That doesn't even count the absolute version, which is under a different category.
If you go back and read it now, it'll probably make a lot more sense to you, because he was doing that Japanese storytelling style. If you go back, there aren't a lot of captions. There's not a lot of narration. It's all visual. And American readers weren't ready for it yet.
Nope.
But it tanked. It did not sell.
It really took the star off Frank Miller, because everybody was all excited. And that actually leads into what will happen when The Dark Knight gets published.
So they come to Miller. Miller and Steve Gerber were asked to come up with a way to revamp Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. And they put together their pitch, and they went to DC, and DC rejected it. Gerber went back to working in animation because it was paying a lot better, and he didn't have to worry about censorship and the code and all of that. He was a work for hire person. He wrote episodes of G.I. Joe, believe it or not. But Miller went back over to Marvel and did the Born Again story, and a lot of people forget, because there were ads for it. After Born Again, there was supposed to be like a 2-issue break, and then he and Walt Simonson were going to take over Daredevil. But instead, DC came to him, and again, backed a dump truck full of money up to his house, and he came up with the idea of The Dark Knight, which is Batman at 50. It was a new format. No one had done that format in comics before, the square bound on the high end of paper. And when comics were a buck, it was going to sell for $2.95. And the orders were not, you know, they weren't what you would think now. The orders were okay. But DC knew that once people saw it, they'd buy more. So they actually overprinted by 40%.
It wasn't enough.
Well, it sold out in 3 days.
Yeah.
And all distributors. All distributors sold out.
Pat and I were buying. I should talk with him about that, because I know we were buying with the idea that we were going to sell at cons. And I think we probably each bought like 10 copies, which was a lot for, you know, considering how badly everybody got burned on Ronin.
And, you know, back then, that's 1986. That's, you know, you probably got a discount, but it's still, you know, only 10 comics for around 15 bucks. When, hey, I could buy, you know, at your discount, you probably could get 30 comics for 15 bucks.
And I am pretty sure that when it did hit, and it did sell out, that we ran around and bought as many as we could from every other store, including Schindler's. And, of course, we hit, Walden Books in the mall, because they got newsstand copies that would show up later. I don't even know if this was in.
No, it wasn't. DC did not have newsstand distribution at that time in the Midwest. And they did a second printing, which now is kind of, you know, that happens a lot. But back then, that was front page news in the Comic Buyer's Guide.
Oh, yeah. And they actually went on to a third printing. And believe me, everybody was buying the second printing. Everybody's buying the third printing. I think we ended up with more second printings that Pat and I had. But the second printing went really fast. The guide price for the second printing is actually higher than the first printing.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah, I don't know if it holds. I'm looking on eBay now, but the problem is when you look on eBay, you know, they use the Dark Knight for frickin' everything.
Oh, yeah, because now there's Legends of the Dark Knight.
Yeah, it was very hard just to find. I'm going through, and I have yet to actually find the first Frank Miller Dark Knight, but I'm going to keep scrolling through. You'll hear me in the background. When I find it, I'll let you know.
The other thing about the comic is, if you go back and read it now, you've read it a few hundred times. Everybody's, you know, if you read comics, you've read Dark Knight.
Oh, yeah. Even Batman Beyond had kind of a retired Batman who's gruff. He went a different way, though.
But when this book came out, it hit like a bomb. I was looking through it a couple weeks ago, and there's stuff in there where it's like, oh, yeah, I forgot about the woman who was bare-breasted and had swastikas on her nipples. Forgot about that!
Yeah, I've got it in the Long Meadow Press book, The Complete Frank Miller Batman.
I've got a copy of that. I've also got one, the Absolute.
Of course, Corey, this isn't even fair because Corey knows this one. What was Frank Miller's first Batman story?
It was a short story in a holiday special in 78.
Yep, yep. It's Santa Claus, Dead or Alive. And believe me, those
And I believe, wasn't that written crazy. By Denny O'Neill?
Hang on, I'm flipping through it here. I can't even, they didn't even put the credits on it. Can you believe that? But the neat thing is there's a note here, because Frank Miller for the book actually wrote some notes here. But it doesn't, no, I'll have to look that up, because okay. I think you're right, but I don't see, I don't see it. There's a point. No credits in this baby, are there?
But the other thing about Dark Knight that we forget at the time, it was a very different, unique style of storytelling. That style of storytelling wasn't being done. It was big pages with small inserts. That was what was going on TV and what people were saying and things like that. And it was a new style of storytelling. For a lot of talk about Frank Miller, it was inked by Klaus Janson, and Miller and Janson were working like they did on Daredevil, where Miller did layouts and Janson finished them. Which is why the look between Dark Knight 1 and Dark Knight 2 is so different. Janson didn't ink Dark Knight 2. Miller did. Dark Knight 1 was just Miller's layouts. And the other thing is, another way you could tell that it's a different time period, each book stands on its own. There may be a kind of a cliffhanger at the end, but each of the four issues has a beginning, a middle, and an end. So the first one is the return, and then three is the fight with the Joker, and four is the fight with Superman. And DC didn't have Elseworlds back then either. So when they had the Robin costume, And Batman said that Jason, you know, it was Jason Todd's, and Jason Todd had died. There was almost this thing of, well, when's Jason Todd going to die? Because DC had done that before in the Legion of Superheroes, when, you know, the adult Legion, there's a statue of Pharaoh Lad, who had died in battle. Oh, well, when's Pharaoh Lad coming in? And when he does, how's he going to die? So there was a lot of, when they did the 900 number to kill Robin, I know a lot of people at the shop that I worked at were like, well, we know Robin dies because he's dead in Dark Knight. That was one of the three books also that got mainstream attention focused on comics. You know, before that, no one had done a review of comic books in the New York Times. No one had done a review of comic books in a mainstream magazine. It was always, you know, bang, zap, pow, comics are worth a lot of money.
Now, you remember what Frank Miller said when they asked him about Robin in Dark Knight?
No, I don't.
He said, she's white.
Oh, that's right.
Now, the reason I mention that is, and I've mentioned this in the past, when I was working at the college radio station, WMMR, University of Minnesota, we had this, later on in 86, we got this box of graphic novels. And what the deal was is we were supposed to give away these graphic novels, and then everybody who got one got a chance to win a flyer voucher for, I think it was Continental Airlines at the time. And so I made a number. I mean, we had The Shadow, we had Ronin, we had Watchmen. There was a couple other ones. And Dark Knight was one of them. And so I made the script, and I basically said, okay, here's the thing. When you get to this script, it goes, oh, and Robin's there too. She's white. The whole thing was not that Robin was white, but Robin's a girl?
Yep.
That was mind-boggling. Of course, in the PC environment of college, they changed it because they didn't quite get the grasp of what I was trying to explain. So the production guys, oh, Robin's there. She's changed a bit. And I'm like, okay, you took away the fun of the Frank Miller quote and, you know, that 90% I tried to explain, you know, 90. Who's Robin? Dick Grayson. So if I say Robin's a girl, is that interesting? And, of course, these guys have a blank look on their face. So I always stuck with that. And somewhere I have a videotape or, you know, a cassette tape of that. If I can find it, we'll run it sometime because it's kind of funny to listen to what these guys did.
The other thing about the story that before we get into the review, before Dark Knight, there weren't trade paperbacks that stayed in print. That's why when the deal that Alan Moore had, that when Watchmen went out of print, after a year, the copyrights would revert to him. Because back then, even if they did a trade paperback, it was a one-shot publication. And, you know, you go back and you look at the trade paperbacks before Dark Knight, there was one of The Thing. You had the Silver Surfer graphic novel of the 70s. You had DC's big books that came out around the same time as the Origins of Marvel Comics and Son of Origins, and they had maybe one or two printings, and then they went out of print, and they were forgotten. But when Dark Knight was collected, first Graffiti did a limited hardcover that, you know, with the sign and the tipped-in plate that Graffiti was doing at the time. And when Graffiti announced, hey, we'll be publishing this many copies, fans and retailers lost their fucking minds. Oh, what do you mean? Everybody's going to want a copy of this, and you're only printing 3,000 of them. Why are you destroying the market? And DC had to come out and say, there will be another printing. There'll be a trade paperback. Quit worrying about it.
Am I right in remembering that issue 4 came out a lot later than...
Very late. It was very, very late.
Which is why there's only one printing of 4. There's of number... Two, there's three printings. Number one's got three printings. Number three's got two printings. Number four's just got the one.
Because everybody had caught up.
And shortly after that, I remember book one was published. And like you said, there was the book. There was the two different hardcovers.
Yes, there was one from DC Comics and one from Warner Books.
And then there was the Ultra Rare Limited Edition, which I know Gruber was the only one that ever bought one that I knew of.
That was the one from Graffiti Press.
Yep. And I remember the day that came out, I went to Dreamhaven, and they had one of their stores on the corner. I think this was the first, or probably second, version of Dreamhaven in Dinkytown. The first one was upstairs above the drugstore, and then they moved down to a corner. And I got there. Tell me, Corey, when's the last time you saw people lined up at a comic store to get a graphic novel? It was crazy.
Buffy at Dreamhaven.
Yeah. I mean, it just...
And that was, 7, 8 years ago now?
Yeah. And this was back in 86. I mean, I got there, and I was parked right on the corner, and I was just sitting in the car, and all of a sudden, Alan Payne, who was manager of Dreamhaven at the time, just knocked on the door, "Come on in." And so I came in, and I was going to try to help them, but they had tons of hardcovers and trade paperbacks all over the floor, and they were trying to get ready so they could open at 10 o'clock because everybody out there was waiting to come in to get this trade paperback because people were just going mental trying to get it. I remember talking to Pat, thinking he was insane for pre-ordering for our little P&J comic Weekend Warrior guys. He ordered like 4 or 5 copies of the hardcover, and I thought, you're out of your freaking mind. And I wasn't, because we ended up selling them all for a real, I mean, it was a hot price at the time. It also has number one of the hardcover is around like $250 if you can find it.
Yeah.
And like I said, I'm still scrolling through eBay. I haven't found anything. I do have to admit, though, it was also one of Pat and mine's dark moments, because that was also one of the first items we ever had ripped off from us at a show. So somebody out there has a copy of it, and if I find out who, I'm going to remove your eyeballs. Not that I'm angry or bitter. By the way,
I kill you 9 times!
The Frank Miller story, I can't find who wrote it. It might have been just him. But it says Superstar Holiday Special. The first print was in 1980. And then if you go forward to 1988, they had a Christmas with the Superheroes where they reprinted it, among other things. So you don't have to pay exorbitant prices to go check out this particular story. Yeah, they just list the artists. They don't list any writers. See, even then, Image was creeping in, but that's way ahead of our story.
So, Joe, when was the last time you read Dark Knight?
Probably a couple of years ago.
Okay. And your opinion?
Very enjoyable. Always worth rereading. You know, if Christian Bale wants to come back the way Hugh Jackman did and do an old Batman story, this would be the one to do.
I read it about every year or so. And again, the first thing I'm struck by is toward the end how little Miller there is in it. There's a lot of Klaus Janson, and that's fine. That's perfectly fine. Miller does the layouts. Janson does the detailed art. I enjoy that a lot. I think that's one of the best parts of it. The second thing that strikes me is, again, how episodic it is. But for a comic that came out 30 years ago, it still feels fresh. There are bits and pieces of it that are dated, the whole Reagan aspect of it. I was really shocked at how much Ronald Reagan is, I don't want to say a plot point, but he's one of the things that drives the plot. And it's very clear that Frank Miller, not a big fan of Ronald Reagan. But there was a lot of political stuff in it, in that book at the time. And the good thing about it is it doesn't date the book, because you can, the Reagan aspect of it could be any media-driven political figure. But the story holds up very well. It really is Miller's first attempt at doing a Raymond Chandler / Mickey Spillane crime style of storytelling. And it also felt very much like, all right, I'm going to tell Batman as if he's Dirty Harry times 100. And there's even some nods in there that kind of feel a little off, like when Batman is like, yeah, rubber bullets, I promise.
Apparently there was a fourth printing. Somebody's got a CGC slabbed one that says fourth printing.
Of the first issue?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That doesn't...
It's only $2,000, I mean...
There's a part of me that wonders if it went to a fifth printing, but I'd have to look at my Overstreet for that. But yeah, it hit like a bomb. And it changed comics. That Watchmen and Mouse in 86 changed comics. So, on a review scale, Joe, buy, borrow, or ignore.
Oh, buy as many versions as you possibly can.
This is one, I remember I bought it as regular issues, and then I bought the trade paperback because I knew I'd read it a lot. And then you talked about the complete Frank Miller, about that.
Yeah,
and
that.
Then I bought the Absolute.
This yeah, is that a, as well.
This is a classic. This is a comic that if you read comics, you need to read, even if you're not a big superhero person. It's you almost need to read it to understand the medium, because Miller changed how stories were told. And then, let's see, that ended in 86. So, 15 years later, comics are not selling very well. It was a slump. The slump had started in the mid-90s, and comics still weren't out of it. Frank Miller had been working on Sin City over at Dark Horse, had not worked for Marvel or DC for quite a long time. And if I remember right, even Sin City had kind of ended, and Miller wasn't really doing a whole lot. And DC announced Dark Knight 2. And it was going to be a three-issue prestige format. He was going to draw it all himself. And DC was pushing it to the moon. Joe, you owned a shop when Dark Knight 2 came out.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the pitch that they gave you? Did they just say, eh, Frank Miller's doing another Dark Knight, buy a lot of them, fanboy?
There was nothing special that I recall. I can't even recall how many I ordered, although people were very, very excited for it.
And one of the things about it, again, Miller had an all-new art style. And the funny thing is, whenever Miller does a new art style, people complain about it at the time, and then everybody copies it, and then they're using it. I always point to Sin City. When the first Sin City stories came out, people are like, I don't get this Frank Miller thing. All the shadows are white, and all the light is black, and I don't understand it. Then when Jim Lee ripped it off for, what was that comic, Deathblow?
Could have been.
It's a comic that Jim Lee drew for Image, where he pretty much stole the style, except he put some color on it. People are like, oh my God, this is the greatest art style ever. Jim Lee is a genius. But when Dark Knight 2 came out before and after 9/11, which I think has a lot to do with the story. But when Dark Knight 2 came out, a lot of people's reaction to it was, not what Miller wants.
What the hell is this?
Yes. And leading up to it coming out, Miller said, when I did Dark Knight, everybody learned the wrong lesson from it.
Yeah.
Rather than doing
everybody
more mature stories.
Dark and gritty. So make Batman as dark and gritty and unlikable as possible. Grrr.
And Miller and Alan Moore, who had, done Watchmen and felt the same thing, if you look at their output around that time, they both were wanting to put the fun back in comics. Alan Moore was doing ABC, the ABC line, America's Best Comics, which were just fun. He was doing Supreme as well for Rob Liefeld, which was just the most joyful celebration of the Bronze Age Superman. I'm sorry, the Silver Age Superman you've ever seen. all the goofy shit they did with Superman, he just took it and had fun with it. And Miller kind of was doing the same thing with Dark Knight 2, but I don't think people got it. I still don't think people
got
it.
No, I didn't either, because I remember asking, like, I don't like this at all. And you kind of said, it's lighthearted. It's supposed to be more comedic. Oh,
yeah.
Okay, that makes better sense.
And it's also, hey, let's get all the superheroes together.
Yeah, kind of figure out where they are. What was, now let me ask you this, Corey. You remember Schoolhouse Rock, don't you?
Yes.
All right, let me see if I can find it. Do you have your copy of Dark Knight 2 nearby?
Not nearby. It's, I have the regular comics in a box somewhere, and I have the Absolute on a shelf.
Okay. Well, do you recall back to Schoolhouse Rock, your electricity?
Yes.
And do you remember where they, how they said if we only had a superhero who could run real fast, we wouldn't have to use so much fuel to make electricity?
Yes.
And do you remember what Frank Miller did to the Flash?
Yes, I do.
I wonder. I just wonder if Frankie Boy grew up with Schoolhouse Rock. Because that was, of all the things in Dark Knight 2, other than Carrie's costume, that was one of the things, because apparently the powers that be just really screwed over the superheroes, and they put Flash and locked him into a giant turbine and left him running under the idea that they would kill Iris if
he ever stopped.
And of course, he's like, damn, Bruce, damn him. They'll kill Iris for this. No, sir, Iris is safe. We have her. She misses you. She asked me to give you this. Hands the ring, and boom, the Flash is back.
My personal favorite was the Atom, who, when you're reading the story, it's like, oh, my God, he's fighting all these monsters and everything. They trapped him in a Petri dish where he was fighting, the viruses and bacteria and stuff. Which called back to the Sword of the Atom, which was the Atom got stuck, shrunk down, and was kind of in a barbarian world. So Miller kind of did that, except, instead he's fighting bacteria. Rather than, miniature dragons and rats and stuff.
Which kind of brings us to Weird Al's song, about bacteria.
But Dark Knight 2, Miller had evolved his style, and I don't think people liked it because they were used to the Miller's stuff in Dark Knight 1, which was stylized, but also familiar, because you had Klaus Janson kind of making it look more like the Daredevil work that people were used to than the really stylized stuff that he did in Ronin. But if you look at the art in Dark Knight 2 and you look at the art in Ronin, they're very much alike. Miller's was moving toward almost geometric shapes to show characters rather than realistic poses. He never much cared for the realistic poses. And I was reading Joe Matt, who's done a lot of autobiographical work, indie guy. He talks about how Miller was almost doing Bigfoot cartooning in it, where he drew more from, I'm trying to think of some good example, Bugs Bunny and Donald Duck and things like that. He was drawing more from that than he was from realistic superhero stuff.
Now, of course, you don't have to.
He was trying to be more cartoony than the Neil Adams, everything must be real.
Now, of course, there were variant covers, too.
Yes.
And they were very tricky. If you remember the difference between the variant covers, Corey?
I do not.
One had only the DK2 on the cover, and the other one had Frank Miller, Lynn Varley, The Dark Knight Strikes Again across it. So basically the same artwork, just one had a top cover, one didn't. And you'll have to spend a lot of money on eBay if you want to pick up a set. And I think the trades are still in stock. So, but they did. They didn't do any reprintings on the issues. The books up to a fourth printing. There was a limited edition available. If you're prone to find it, and a hardcover as well, which I believe I bought.
And the other thing about this story is it did lead up to a fight with Batman versus Lex Luthor and Brainiac. This was more of a superhero story. Dark Knight 1, you had the Joker in 3, you know, in part 3. And he was defeated fairly, I don't want to say easily, but it was kind of a standard superhero fight. But the rest of it was just kind of odd. And the other thing that Miller brought into Dark Knight 1 that hadn't been around, Miller didn't think that in the future, Batman and Superman would get along. So he did that. Then all of a sudden, in World's Finest Comics, Batman and Superman don't get along anymore.
Yeah.
And through most of the 90s, Batman and Superman, they really didn't get along. They respected each other, but they weren't, you know, they weren't best pals. That didn't come till Jeff Loeb did the Batman-Superman series. But this kind of continued the Batman and Superman don't get along, but now they're going to fight together because they kind of have to. Dark Knight 2 was not as groundbreaking as 1. I don't think it was as good as 1, but I do still think it was a very good book. For me, it is a buy. But I do want to say that if you're expecting a standard kind of a superhero, grim, gritty, whatever, you're not going to like it at all. Because it's not. It's, hey, let's have some fun. Let's put Flash in a cool costume. Let's have the Atom show up. Let's have Batman beat the shit out of Lex Luthor sort of thing. Joe, your opinion.
I'd buy it. I think it was a good story, worth reading. You know, if you want to go the cheap route, pick up the comics. You can find them real cheap online. These were all like $7.95 a piece.
Yeah.
What were comics running?
$2 to $2.50.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they hit $2.99 till later.
Yeah.
And now we have Dark Knight 3. And Dark Knight 3 came out in a bajillion different formats, and a bajillion different covers, and a bajillion different ways.
Now, I bought it in two ways. I bought the regular version, although if I could find a variant cover or two, I would pick them up. Most of the time I flipped them, but some of them I donated to the charity auctions. And then I picked up the slipcase edition, which was when they had individual hardcovers of the issue, and then you bought the box to put them in along with issue, how many parts was in this thing?
Oh my God, I don't even know.
Hang on a sec.
I think the regular comic was 9 parts, but then there were 4 tie-ins.
I didn't buy a lot of the tie-ins, but yeah, 9 issues. Every comic had like 9 different variations. Wait a minute, how many? Wait, 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, about 9 to 10 different variations. There were exclusive covers. There were collector hardcovers. There were black
and
white.
That was the thing. It was the regular comic wasn't really a regular comic. It was a comic with a mini comic inside. And they also, for each issue, would have a $12.95 hardcover of just that issue. So, cash grab? Cash grab, anyone?
Oh,
cash?
Big time.
The other thing about this is Miller, not the writer or artist. He is listed as co-writer with Brian Azzarello, who's probably best known for the 100 Bullets series. He also did a run on Batman that was one of those special, you know, he and Eduardo, I think it was Rizzo? I can't remember the name, but they did a 12-part Batman story that, you know, took up a year of Batman comics. And Klaus Janson came back to do the inking, and Andy Kubert or Adam Kubert?
Andy.
Andy Kubert drew it with Klaus Janson doing the inking. And the hardcover just came out last week, about a week and a half ago now.
Yeah.
And I waited because it's like when I saw all the different permutations of every issue and that it was, you know, oh, and here's this tie-in and here's this, I just kind of shook my head and went, no. Wait. This is going to be a pain in the ass to put together, and it's going to be late. So I'll wait and buy the hardcover when it came out. Well, the hardcover just came out. Another few things about kind of the backstory of it. Miller kind of he's changed his tune on how much he did on it. Because when it first came out, it's, oh, yeah, I gave the plot to Azzarello, and he worked with the artists and all this. But then, you know, as it was coming out, I forget who it was, but there was a comic creator who asked him about what it was like to write with Azzarello. And Miller said, oh, I have as much to do with the writing of that comic as you do. But some of the mini comics were written and drawn by Frank Miller. And I think some of the tie-in books were written and drawn by Miller, too. And also, you know, comic sales are in a slump. DC's in a slump. For all the talk, and I keep hitting on this, for all the talk about how Marvel sales aren't what they were, and all their sales are down, and all, DC sales are the same. They're in a slump. And in some ways, this slump for single-issue comics is as bad as comics were sales-wise in 99, 2000, 2001. So, DC, you know, tried with Before Watchmen to get a big cash infusion. And, boy, I don't think it worked, because if you go to Half Price Book of Magazine, you want those Before Watchmen trades? They got them. They got a lot of them. I don't see those being sold 5-6 years from now. But Dark Knight 3, it was DC's best-selling book every month it came out. It didn't hit like a bomb. Dark Knight 1 hit like a bomb. Dark Knight 2 kind of hit like a bomb as well. But Dark Knight 3 kind of be, oh, yeah, it's there. And all the different formats, all I could think is, please do not let that become a trend. Because after Dark Knight, the square-bound comic became a trend. As one-shots, as mini-series, as things like that. You go back and you look at comics from like 88 to like 96. The square-bound 48 to 72-page comic, and most of them I remember became like 595. They were a big thing. There were a lot of them.
What was the next one that came after Dark Knight? Was it the Green Arrow?
Yeah, Green Arrow came out in that format. Hawk World, Cosmic Odyssey, Gilgamesh 2, Batman the Cult, which had the first embossed cover of those, by the way.
Ooh.
That was, what, 88 or 89? I really hope that this format doesn't become one that they use all the time. Oh, what a pain in the butt that would be. I did pick up issue 1 to flip through it. And the mini comic inside just annoyed me.
I thought it was fun. It didn't bother me as much. I just had to realize
the art was smaller and
it wasn't part of the story. You just had to read it after.
Yeah. Now in the hardcover that they put out, it's put in the chronological order that you're to read it in, and it's the entire story, all 400 pages of the darn thing. Joe, what was your impression after you sat down and read the whole thing?
I liked it. And the one thing that my favorite moment, I think, was towards the end when Bruce Wayne's watching Superman kick ass and he goes, Clark's been holding back all these years. And he realizes, I could never defeat Superman. Because Clark's been holding back, and he just watches as Superman just tears through, releasing all of his power to defeat the villains. That was kind of the high point for me. I think that occurred in the last issue, too.
Yep. I had problems with it. And I think the first problem I had with it was, while it was still in the Dark Knight world, it didn't feel like a Dark Knight story, because the Dark Knight stories, the way they're told, changes things. They're innovative. They're trying new things. They're, you know, really pushing the boundaries of comic storytelling and kind of pushing comic storytelling to the next level. And other than the different formats, I didn't get that feel.
I didn't get that with the second one, so I guess I wasn't expecting it in the third one.
Well, in the second one, Miller's art style was, you know, all different.
Yeah, but it wasn't groundbreaking. It was, everybody was kind of like, meh.
But in this one, there were a lot of layouts that looked exactly like Dark Knight 1. It's like, oh yeah, that's the same layout. The panels may be in different places on the big two-page spread, but it's the same sort of layout. It felt like the same thing. The political satire was there. It felt like a big event book. And it really felt like somebody else was playing in the world that Frank Miller created. That's really how it felt to me, for good or bad. I had so many problems with the story, though. Joe, what was the first two issues about?
I think they were just talking about getting Batman and setting up the way the world is. It was
Carrie as Batman outrunning the cops, then getting caught, then going to prison, then escaping. Which had nothing to do with the rest of the story in any way, shape, or form. It added nothing to the... That was just pure padding. And then, you know, what does she do when she's in prison? She tells the commissioner, Batman's dead. 5 pages later, Batman reveals he's not dead. You could have cut the first two issues out and it wouldn't have mattered at all. It was things like that. The story felt very padded. It did not need to be 400 pages long. And if you needed to have that many issues, spend more time with on Paradise Island. Spend more time why Kara jumped in with the religious cult leader from the Bottle City of Kandor, rather than, oh, he showed up? Yeah, I don't like my dad. I'm going to be with you. There were so many frustrating things like that, where it was, you could have done something interesting, and instead it just kind of was there. And I also thought Batman versus the Kryptonians. I wanted a big, huge... I wanted something much cooler than I got, because it really felt like, oh, wow, they really set this up and... Oh, kryptonite rain, okay. I do like Miller's... the parts that Miller drew. I thought that they were very fun. It showed how Miller lays out a story. The issue where he drew about the Atom, I think it was the first mini-comic, I was reading that going, God, why can't it all just be like this? This is fun, and it's unique, and it's interesting. Andy Kubert is a very good artist, but it's very much like, okay, this is 90s art. Okay, I'm okay with that. On the buy, borrow, or ignore, I give it a very tentative buy. Sounds like you had much more fun with it than I did.
Oh, I did.
I had much more fun with Dark Knight 2.
But see, it evens out. Frank Miller announced that he's planning to produce a fourth miniseries to conclude the story. He said, although I thoroughly applaud what was being done, but now that Brian Azzarello is doing Dark Knight 3, it's now a four-part series, I'm doing the fourth.
Yep.
Of course, that was back in 2015. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we're still waiting on that 300 prequel. But I imagine, knowing DC the way they are now, we're going to get a Dark Knight 4 and a Dark Knight 5 and a Dark Knight 45 and a Dark Knight 115.
Yeah, before Dark Knight and Dark Babies and Dark Man Meets the Watchmen and...
I just wonder how long until, if, okay, Miller's dead, ah, Dark Knight the series.
Oh, they've already done that. They just co-opt the name every time they come up with a new Batman. If they made a movie
set a regular monthly series in this world.
I was trying to figure out what world it was. They said, it's in one of the,
it's in Multiversity.
Worlds. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the 52 worlds. Of course.
Of course.
But it's a good book. It doesn't, to me, it's like.
You want.
What is it? You see all these things where they show the different, you know, the different sequels. It felt like if Star Trek 1 had been really, really good, and then Star Trek 2 was good, and then Star Trek 3 was okay. You remember Star Trek 3, right, Joe?
Which one?
Star Trek 3, the where the Genesis planet falls apart,
yeah.
And Kirk's son dies and all that.
You're talking the Pine universe, where I didn't even see the third one yet.
Well, the third one's much better than the second one. Third, for that one, it's one is really good, two is okay, and three is awesome. But for the Star Trek movies, I remember 3 was just kind of, okay, that was good. You know, it was fun. Wasn't great. Because after Star Trek 2, you know, your expectations are really high. So there you go. There's the Dark Knight. When Dark Knight 4 comes out, we'll probably talk about it.
Oh, yeah. So we got that on the agenda.
Yes. You know who's also on our agenda, Joe?
Who's that?
These guys! Our sponsors!
That's right, here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network, we have ads, and our first sponsor is me. That's right, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. I have my first book out with Dangerous Dan Moore. It's the first 100 strips of our online web strip, Worldwide News, the story of the lowest-rated cable news network. And you can get yourself a copy with commentary, with all sorts of extras, with signatures and everything. Just email Dan over at lordshadowflame@gmail.com. Our top sponsor, who's been with us since day one, is DreamHost. DreamHost.com. You need yourself a website, and DreamHost.com is the number one web host in the whole known universe. Just head over to DreamHost.com, put in the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, get $20 off your first year. How can you beat that? Our other sponsor is Graze, G-R-A-Z-E.com. Healthy snacks for a healthy lifestyle. Just head over to Graze, put in the code CORYS3R5P. Your first and fifth box are free. You can get them weekly. You can get them biweekly. You can get them monthly. You can just order a whole bunch of them. It's great stuff to keep you away from the vending machine at work. Now, if you would like to leave a comment for any of the podcasts that we do, we'd love those. Go ahead and email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, or you can call 952-856-0519. Operators are standing by. Okay, it's just a place that we'll record your calls, but we'll play them on the air. We'll answer your questions. We love getting feedback. Tell us what you think. Ask a question. Suggest a topic. Be a guest. Send us your stuff. SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. If you would like to advertise on any of the Solitaire Rose radio shows, you can. Just email us at SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. Subject advertising. Thanks.
And after our sponsors, we talk about the other podcasts we're doing. Joe, last week, we had a full week. We had the regular Crazy Comics and Stories that came out on Monday, and then we had Solitaire Rose Radio, where I interviewed Danny J. Quick, who's got a Kickstarter for his comic Ace Blade. This week, we got stuff, too. We got this here podcast.
Yay!
Over at badadvice.solitairerose.com, we got a new episode of Bad Advice. And who knows, I am on vacation this week, so I might sneak out another podcast on Friday if I get the time.
Cool.
Or I might just kind of, you know, sit around my parents' house and read funny books and watch movies.
Or you could just load half the fill-in that we tried to do but only recorded partway, I guess.
Well, I tried, and it references so much stuff in the first part that it's, yeah. We recorded a fill-in episode. And I remember at the time, Pamela crashed, And sometimes when Pamela crashes, everything's fine. Sometimes when it crashes, it's not. This was one where it was not. And I've spent about a month trying to salvage that episode, and it just, yeah.
It just doesn't work.
It's gone, Johnny. Gone. And if you head on over to worldwidenews.solitairerose.com, Dan is drawing new strips.
Cool.
So a whole bunch of stuff going on here at the Solitaire Rose Network. And after we get done with my plugs, we then do Joe's plugs. Joe, what's coming up for Joe this week?
Well, nothing on the eBays, because...
Why is that?
It's all going to Fall Comic-Con, the one-day wonder, October 7th at the Minnesota State Edumacation Building.
You need to get edumacated.
Yep, and we already dropped the websites. You got a few days still to get advanced tickets. There will be grab bags for the first people in, free parking, there's door prizes. There's going to be over 100 comic creators there.
Wait, door prizes?
Oh, yeah. So if
good.
Someone like you
door.
That needs a new door, you're right. Well, of course, you won't be there. But, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I've been working hard.
Working in a coal mine.
People have been watching my eBay store. You've been seeing things disappear. If they've disappeared, that means they're in the dollar bin. Corey has seen my dollar books.
You've got a nice little con set up there.
And I've got more going in there. You know, as we're recording this podcast, it's a week away. By the time you listen to it, you've got, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You got 5 days to get ready for the con. So come on out. Say
be
hi.
There. And, sorry, I did that too soon.
Oh, that's okay. Because we want you to be there.
Be there.
And then, of course, when the next podcast rolls around, I'll be putting my eBay store back together, and we'll see what kind of goodies I've found and what's left. And, you know, I still got oodles of stuff to be selling.
Oodles.
My accumulation of crap won't be vast, but it'll still be there. So, again, you see something you want, make your move, K-R-A-Y-Z. If you saw something you wanted, send me a quick note because I'll pull it out of the dollar bin and make you a deal. And, of course, I always like to include a little extra just for the listeners of this here podcast.
Going above and beyond.
Well, you know, better in your basement than mine.
I don't have a basement.
You got something underneath the home.
Cats.
Meow. I thought it was cars.
No, it's a cat.
Oh, okay.
So, cats. I have two cats who kind of hang out under the house. I call one of them Stranger Cat because I don't know her very well.
Well, you obviously know it's a her. You must know of her pretty good.
Well, she's friendly enough. Every few days, she's sitting in front of the house, and when I come up, she yells at me quite loudly because there are times I've fed her.
What's wrong with you, human? Feed me.
And the reason I know she's a female is because last spring she was rather large. And then she became very skinny. And there was a lot more noise under the house.
Mm.
So the kittens, meow, they're all gone now. I don't know where they went. They probably wandered off to their own homes
yep.
to live under.
They're probably up the hill at the pickle factory.
You're getting pickled.
Yep.
Well, after Joe does his plugs, we get to my favorite part of the show.
Oh,
no, not where I drink a bottle of whiskey and start cursing about the government. Freaking and geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
I'm running out of time. I got more shit to put in the dollar bins, and I don't have time. Another thing kind of hit me hard. Holly come up to me and said, hey, you know my box of comics upstairs?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Take them. Bring them to the con. So why? You don't want them anymore? No. I don't think I'm going to read them again. So she's at that age where she's not interested in periodical comics. She's more than willing to read something if I offer it to her, if she's aware of it. I mean, she's got my, what was that thing? Big Bad Sin City? That
yeah.
Chart cover. She's had that for a number of years. Oh, by the way, I guess if you have one, you should probably lay it horizontally because if you do it vertically, eventually it sags.
Well, we all sag after a few years.
There's some guy had a thing about Omnibuy, and I tagged Corey on it and said, show yours off. And other people were talking, and somebody had mentioned about I had my Sin City, and it started to tear from the seams because it's so damn heavy. So Yeah, so, and Holly did give me some stuff. Let me see if I can find this one. As I curious, you know, I've got like piles of comics here. I ain't got time to go through them all. Corey, have you ever heard of The Last of Us?
Yeah, it's a video game.
Apparently the comic books are insanely expensive.
Yes, because that video game is insanely popular.
Yeah, well, and like most things that come out, they come out and nobody's paying attention to it. And, of course, the dream, you know, those gamers found out about it. Holly gave me like three of the four issues, and yeah, they're eBay bound. They're very expensive. So if you're looking for them, let me know. There was. Do you remember, Corey? What was the one book I told you that if you were going to invest, I'm using quotation marks, in books that you should pick it up?
Rugrats.
Yep. Have you heard of the property Bee and Puppy Cat?
No.
Me neither, but it's some type of kid book. Boom Kids came out with it, that first issue. $20.
Not bad.
Nope, not really. And, again, Holly had one, so I'm kind of impressed. And, you know, I told her, okay, what do you want me to do with them? So some are going to FallCon, some are going to eBay. Some of you, if you're interested, drop me a note, and we'll take care of that. Always got to keep those plugs going, right? But that's pretty much, I'm more freaking out, like I said, that just all of a sudden she's just out of comics. You know, she's got money, she's got a job, there's other things she's doing. I think she went to a swing dance tonight. She's got a boyfriend, she's got, you know. So comics just, the kids today just ain't that big into the comics, you know. Depressing. Of course.
Well, you know, they're busy with the cell phones and and the big hair and the loud pants and the listening to the Skrillex.
And, yeah. Of course, on the plus side, they'll all be with me at FallCon, so it'll be kind of a family affair. Woohoo!
It's a family affair. It's a family affair.
Corey, what are you freaking on?
And probably no box day.
Oh, what?
For at least a week.
Do you have a good place to hide a box?
Well, here's the thing. I'm going to be gone.
Can they hold and, the box, or?
Well, I have someone who will show up and get my mail and put it in the house.
My worry is just if it's sat outside and it's contained, you know.
But that means that all of vacation, I won't have box day. I won't have my box to take with me on vacation.
Well, will it make you feel better to know that I'll have my box day right before Comic-Con?
Yeah, but you won't have time to read anything. I will have time to read all kinds of things. You won't have time to read anything.
Hey, foolish mortal. Wait till we get to geeking.
Second thing is, I am all caught up on the Superman books. Joe, you know that they've been in Superman, there's been a Mr. Oz.
Good to hear Kevin Nash got a job again.
Well, yeah. But there's been a Mr. Oz that's trying to get all this information on Superman. They've revealed who Mr. Oz is. So, spoiler alert. You ready?
Nope. Okay, I'm ready.
Who do you think Mr. Oz would be, Joe?
Well, I already made my guess.
And who's that?
Kevin Nash.
Oh. Most people have said, it's Ozymandias. It's part of the crossover with the Watchmen. And, nope! It's Jor-El.
I would have preferred the first one.
I would have preferred anything. Did Superman's dad being alive and on Earth? No. 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 No, 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 no. It's like bringing Uncle Ben back to life. No, no, stop it. It's stupid.
It's like having both their parents named Martha.
And I hope that it's revealed that it's all a lie. It was one of those things when they revealed it, I literally took the comic and went, tossed it.
Next thing you know, Captain America's going to be a Nazi.
Next thing you know, Captain America's going to die and be replaced by a black guy.
We're going to have Dark Knight 4.
Well, enough of the negativity, you nattering nabobs of negativism. What are you geeking on, Joe?
All right, here's my pile of books that I read this week, and they're all dollar bound. Punisher, The End by Garth Ennis and Richard Corbin. Those are two names. I mean, how could I not read this? And basically, it is The End. A Max title. Good to pick it out. Corey, you remember Ganthet's Tale?
Yes.
Niven, John Byrne. Boy, when did this sucker come out?
92, I believe.
Yeah, good. A good little story, ties into the Green Lantern universe. Still might be relevant.
It was a big goddamn deal when it came out.
Oh, yeah. Lots of fun. Speaking of deals... I read, finally, Silver Surfer Superman that came out. Oh, when the heck did this thing come out? I can't read that
90s.
Small ink anymore. 1996, and of course it was either before, or after, or during the DC thing. They refer to Access. They talk about how these two are the type of crossovers that I like, where they're not supposed to be in the same world. There's a reason why Superman got thrown into Marvel Universe and Silver Surfer into the DC. I don't know if this thing has any heat. It was written by George Perez with pencil by Ron Lim and Terry
Giant Pez.
So check that out. Did you read it? Have you ever read any of the Marvel DC Vertical Visions?
Yes.
I read two of them, Dr. Occult and Dr. 13. I had different reactions. Dr. Occult was kind of like a story of... You know, they kind of gave the idea that Dr. Occult has a male-female side. And they really kind of played around with it, but not very satisfyingly, because they kind of came to the conclusion that neither side could exist without the other. We all have females inside us. Women, you have males inside you. Blah, 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 yakety, yakety.
I so many jokes that I just,
I know,
I can't.
I know. And I read this, and I was thinking, you know, whatever. Dr. 13, I read. Now, of course, he was the ghost hunter. This was actually a little bit better read, a little more straightforward. Or was it? After all, it is Vertical Visions. I did kind of like the way they made Dr. 13 just an ass, you know. But it was kind of interesting the way it came up. I don't know if any of this is continuity. Obviously not. We had new DC 52, but at the time it wasn't too bad. Both these came out in 98. Oh, and one of my... I can't believe I didn't read this earlier. Lobo's Blazing Chain of Love. Giffith Grant Cohen. And this thing was definitely for mature readers only. Dig one of these out of the quarter boxes if you want, and you'll see why Lobo is the main man. Reread a book called Freaks and Squeaks that I picked up at, I believe, when we were in St. Cloud. It's the first collection of Freaks and Squeaks by Marvelous Patrick. And, of course, if you go to marvelouspatrick.com, you can see his miniseries. It's a fun little series if you like web strips. And, of course, I picked that one up. On the meh side of things, I read Fear, Ghost Rider, Captain America. This was 1992. I don't know why they did this. Howard Mackey wrote it. Lee Weeks penciled it.
I like Lee Weeks.
Was there a sequel to this? It certainly felt like they were setting something up.
What was the book again?
Fear.
There wasn't a. Of course, they always set up for sequels back then, but no, they didn't do a sequel.
You know, and I borrowed this to a buddy of mine. He read it. And he said, you know, I think I like DC's Scarecrow a little better. They were trying to, like, shoehorn the Marvel Scarecrow to be more like DC's. And that was an astute observation. An amazing miniseries, Witchcraft. Again, tied in from the Marvel universe. And it could be because, Corey, do you remember who wrote it?
Steve Gerber.
Nope. James Robinson.
Really?
Yeah, Witchcraft from, this was in 94.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking a different...
Yeah,
different
no, he
Gerber
did. He did a different one. Let's see, James Robinson, Peter Schneeberg. Sorry, Pete. Teddy,
went on to work over at DC in the Vertigo line.
Oh yeah, beautiful artwork, outstanding story. Definitely one to pick up. And again, all these are dollar books. You can find them. Let's see, in 09 they did an 80-page giant Justice League of America, which was kind of a interesting pre DC 52. You know, the bad guy come forward and he basically dispelled the Justice League of America throughout time. And I think at the time, Snapper Carr was busy hitting on Cheetah. I don't know. It's sometimes the continuity gets you, but and it had a twist. What a twist! A fun little story done in one. Probably not worth $6.99, but it's worth a buck. Birds of Prey 109. This was right before she married Green Arrow, and I believe Barbara Gordon was trying to talk her out of it. So kind of one of those stories. Read Action Comics 850, which was a Supergirl stuck in Legion of Superheroes as they're going back. And, again, another time travel story, which I absolutely love. And they're looking in the past, trying to get clues on how to get Kara back into her own time, because for a while she was hanging out with the Legion. And then New 52 came along and got rid of everything, just like the series I read. Booster Gold, starting with issue 32, because Giffen and DeMatteis came back to bring the back to Booster Gold. And it was a fun run, but eventually it ended because they had a four-issue series tied into Flashpoint that Jurgens and Ratman did that weren't as fun, but it did kind of end up everything. And then, you know, as a standalone, this was actually kind of fun. I don't know if you could actually have Giffen and Matias do it again, because I don't even know. I read the Booster Gold Futures End. I was so confused I had to go to Wikipedia, and I'm still confused. I don't know if they've ever figured out what the hell Booster Gold is or was in the DC Universe. So, or even the I guess there were a couple miniseries, because this kind of went beyond that. But, The final two, of course, Corey, you ever read from Piranha Press, Nation of Snitches by John Hammer?
No, I've not read that.
Not bad. It's kind of takes it. I don't know if it has as much oomph to it as now as it did back then. Let's see. This bad boy was published in 1990. This is basically kind of dealing with interactive narratives, and of course the big thing is the TV show where they snitch on your neighbors and you can win prizes and cash and trips, and the snitch of the year gets a cup. And if you ever pick it up, it's a mature reader book. It's got a couple of funny jokes in the TV guide type thing, but one of those books that just came, went, never had a real hot following. Unlike this last one, Kill Your Boyfriend by Grant Morrison and Philip Bond. It's one of those that I had. It's been republished a couple different times. I've actually got a first print. Don't know if it's worth anything. Took me a while to get into it, but once I started reading it, it was actually very enjoyable. How could you not expect that from Grant Morrison, of course? And, of course, after all this fun stuff, I decided to go and reread The Boys. Corey, tell our listening audience all about The Boys.
The Boys was a series by Garth Ennis and Derek Robinson. It actually started at Wildstorm, but they kind of, after a while, thought it was just
too
a little too much for them. So it moved over to Dynamite. I believe it ran 60 or 70 issues.
I will look that up. And of course,
it ran either 60 or 70 issues, had some tie-ins, but it was about a group of people who took down rogue supervillains.
Yeah, it's 72 issues. They have hardcovers you can get. There's 6 deluxe hardcovers or 12 regular books, and that's what I've got. I got the paperbacks, and of course, it puts them all in the right order. The interesting thing about it. Well, I don't want to say much about it because it'll be revealed as you read it. You can pick up number one, the book, and there's certain creators. You know, I mentioned Grant Morrison, Garth Ennis. You know, they could write the phone book, and I'd pick it up. It was a little kind of interesting. My bummer part is that I'm not sure I have the eighth book, which is I think. Covers the miniseries, and I know I picked up books 10, 11, 12 at last SpringCon, but I have no idea where they are. So I'm hoping as I wade through them, eventually they will surface as I move out all the comics that I'm looking to blow out at the con. You know, hopefully things that have disappeared will resurface. Probably not. So that was pretty much it, other than doing a little overtime, doing a lot of prep work for the con. You know, I've been working to get this thing going for a better part of a year. Days away. How much more can I stuff in them boxes there? We'll find out. So hopefully I get to see y'all at FallCon. Corey, what you geeking on?
We are recording this on Thursday night.
Yes.
That means I have one more sleep and one more day shift, and I am on vacation from Saturday this week to Sunday of next week.
Slacker.
I know. I'm doing one sleep shift at the group home on Saturday night just because, hey, you know, they want to pay me to sleep.
You're not leaving yet. Yeah, might as well do it.
Yeah. And I actually was going to go down to Illinois on Wednesday because they were snooping around that they might want me to do overnights on Monday and Tuesday. But when they said that they didn't need me for that, I decided I am going to drive down the Mississippi River Road and take 2 days. Normally, when I drive down to Illinois to visit my parents, it takes about 7 hours. And, you know, I'm just going, you know, just driving like my dad. We don't stop.
Yeah, my dad was that way, too. Although he had certain things he wanted to visit, we'd be like, oh, let's go check out this. No, we got to keep going this way.
I still remember the trip back from Wyoming. You know, it's through South Dakota. And, you know, you see all the signs for Waldrop.
Oh, yeah.
And us kids were just, oh, we got to stop at Waldrop.
It's just a tourist trap. You don't need to go to Walmart.
Well, when we went by, we were like, why didn't you stop? Oh, I thought you guys were just kidding. Yeah, sure we did. Instead, we went to the Corn Palace. To this day, I have no idea why we stopped there because
it smells vaguely of corn.
There was nothing there to do.
Really, when we went through it, they actually had a bunch of setups. Like people were selling, almost like a farmer's market type thing. People were selling.
Oh, no. We went through and it was pictures of celebrities who performed there.
Yeah, because that's essentially what it is. And I think during the school year, they use it for the high schools or whatever. But yeah, we went through summer, and maybe we hit it at the right time. It was just, I just remember going through because it was like, oh, look at this. I got some corn jam. Let's give it a try. And I recall it wasn't too bad, although it did drive my wife's sinuses nuts because it's like, this place smells of dusty corn.
Yeah, pretty much. And when we got to Mount Rushmore, it was, head up, take a picture. They're closing in 20 minutes.
Did you guys drive by Crazy Horse?
Oh, we spent 2 hours there.
What was there anything there?
This was 1981, so no.
Yeah, see, I remember in the 70s, it was just a kind of an outcropping. And they had a hole where, you know, because his arm's going to be pointing out.
Yes.
So the hole was there. And the last time we visited, it was, you know, what I recall is we went across a bridge. They had a little area you could go in and visit, and you know, they say, here's what it's going to look like, blah blah blah. Last time we went, oh man, it is totally touristed out. I mean, you can come around, you come a certain direction, you'll be able to see the front of the thing. They cleared out all the land in front of it. They got laser shows at night, huge visitor center, huge area you can pick up different knickknacks. You can either pick up a gigantic piece of stone or get one that people have sculpted off of that they blew off the mountaintop. You can take a ride to the foot of it. You can take a ride up to the top of it if they're not doing excavation work. Much, much different nowadays.
But I am going to be driving down the Mississippi River Road. Taking 2 days, so I'm going to go stop at a bunch of places, and about, I don't know, halfway down, I'm going to just stop at a hotel and whatever small, cool little town that has
off
stuff
the air,
to walk
I've been trying
see.
To goad Corey into visiting the different comic stores because, you know, I was telling him there's one in Winona, allegedly one in LaCroix or La Crosse there down at the Wisconsin border there. Because I figured.
I found there's a toy and car museum that I will be stopping at.
Ooh, and that way Corey can do it like I used to do when I was traveling, and I would give mini reviews of the different stores that I got to visit when I was doing it as part of my job. So now it's Corey's turn.
But the other thing is, you know, I'm going to be visiting my parents, and it's going to be, you know, watching movies, reading books, visiting with people. But I'm not going to be, you know, rushed around. You know, a lot of vacations, people are like, oh, we did this, and we did this, and we did this. No, I do all that during the rest of the time. I'm going to be relaxing because we're about to hit our busy season at the full-time job. And at the part-time job, I think at least one of the overnight staff are getting ready to quit.
Ooh.
So
more sleep for Strode.
Yes. The next thing, it's by the time this drops, it is October, and October is one of my favorite months. And it's one of my favorite months because it's fall. I love fall weather. I prefer a bit of a nip in the air, a bit of a chill in the morning when you wake up, low humidity. I'm going to be hitting two haunted houses and maybe more. I'm going to be going up to the Haunted Hayride in, Wyoming, Minnesota, I think it is, and the Terror Trail out here in Shakopee. It's hoodie weather, and I much prefer wearing hoodies to wearing a t-shirt, because I just do. And Turner Classic Movies runs horror movies all month. They're going to be running pretty much all of the Universal Classic Horrors, and they're going to be running all of the Hammer Horrors that they have the rights to, so all of the Dracula movies, except for Dracula and the Seven Golden Vampires, which is a movie that they made with Kung Fu movie makers, the Shaw Brothers, which has to be seen to be believed. But, October is a fun month, and a lot of stuff on Turner Classic I'm excited about. And there's another book I've been reading, Joe.
A real book?
A real book.
Wow.
Now, when I read a book on comics history, I'm pretty jaded, because a lot of the books on comic history I read is like, I know that. I know that. Ah! Oh, why are they? Because they're not written for me. They're written for a general audience. What was it? The Secret History of Marvel Comics by Sean Howe. I liked that book. It had a bunch of stuff in there that I didn't know. He spent a lot of time interviewing people. There was another book by Doc Vassalero that talked about Timely Comics and the pulps that Martin Goodman did. Because it's Doc Vassalero, he knows far more than me. But this book is called Slugfest, Inside the Epic 50-Year Battle Between Marvel and DC by Reed Tucker. And he, for the last 10 years, he's worked for the New York Post. But boy, he dug in deep. He was able to pull out stuff I didn't know. Joe, did you know that Stan Lee interviewed to be a publisher over at DC Comics in 1972?
No, I didn't.
He did. When it looked like Chip Goodman was going to be put in charge of Marvel, Stan, who'd been there forever, didn't much care for that. So he was friends with Carmine Infantino, and he came over and he said, "Hey, Carmine, how about you give me an interview for editor-in-chief?" And Carmine said, "We don't have an editor-in-chief, but, you know, we've got publisher. You know, I'm kind of editorial director, and we could, you know, do that." So Stan interviewed for it, but nothing came of it because the new owners, Candace Industries, when Martin Goodman's contract was over, they fired his son, too. A lot of the stuff about talent raids, a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff. This guy did some digging. There's solid interviews with people. You could tell that he talked to people who knew people. The only thing that's annoying is there are times when he will have a big revelation. And like, I'll tell one of the stories. DC felt that Marvel was getting too much inside information in the early 70s. And to figure out who was leaking the information, Carmine Infantino wrote up a fake memo about a comic called Blockbuster. And this is back when comics were still 15 cents. He wrote up a memo for a comic called Blockbuster that would cost a dollar and be 500 pages. And it would be like one-third ads and, you know, just kind of a big, thick book that would hit the stands every month, part reprint, part new. And he put the memo in personnel files that other people wouldn't know about. And he didn't talk to anybody at the company about. And within a week or so, Stan Lee, in an interview, talked about how he was going to be printing a 500-page comic that sold for a dollar. So Infantino knew who'd leaked the memo and took away this freelancer's keys. But the book doesn't say who the freelancer was. You can't tell that story without saying, oh, and by the way, it was this guy. When you're naming names and actually giving dollar amounts to how much people are getting paid on other pages. But this one, oh, no, we want to protect this guy from this story 40 years ago. But it's a solid book. It's coming out soon. It's in hardcover and digital.
Go ahead, drop
Slugfest.
It. Slugfest.
By Reed Tucker. And the last thing I am geeking on, one of the things that Dark Horse, well, no, there are two things I'm geeking on. Both have to do with Dark Horse. They bought a comic book chain called Things from Another World. And normally I don't much bother with it because it's, you know, just selling Dark Horse stuff and regular comics with a slight discount. You know, DCB Service has a better discount. But they now have a Nick and Dent section for graphic novels. And everything in the Nick and Dent section, they say, you know, it's just, it's got some scuffs or things that they can't sell it, you know, can't give it to the distributor, but they're selling them all at half price. So I'm digging through their half price bin online.
Go ahead and drop their website again.
ThingsFromAnotherWorld.com, baby! Or just go to Google and put in Things from Another World or TFAW. Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about funny books for an hour and a half.
Thank you very much.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
What happened when Batman bumped his head? He became Bruised Wayne.
Someone just punched me. Just knock me out right now.
Can't do that, but you can hit my music.
Funk is on a roll. Funk is on a roll.
Hey, 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 yo. Can somebody call my mama? It's about to get funky up in here.
Done, bitches!